Abomination. That had always been Hagon's favorite word. Abomination, abomination, abomination. To eat of human meat was abomination. To mate as a wolf with wolf was abomination. And to seize the body of another man was the worst abomination of all. Hagon was weak, afraid of his own power. He died weeping and alone when I ripped his second life from him. Verimir had devoured his heart himself. He taught me much and more, and the last thing I learned from him was the taste of human flesh. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we decided to rebrand ourselves and relaunch at the same time the game did with a second edition. Each week we bring you a new dose of strategy insight and all-around geeky goodness. A huge thank you to Fantasy Flight Games, George R. Mart, and our patrons and fans. This wouldn't be possible without you. We have huge plans, and this year we get to enact those. We are going to be co-hosting Game of Thrones Nationals. Learn more at agotnationals.com. Also check out the community site at agot.cards, where you can find tons of community content and an event listing system. You know, sometimes I forget just how dark certain passages in these books can get.
That is some real shit, as they say.
Sometimes I think George Martin is writing about FFGOP and doesn't realize it.
Whoa. Whoa.
That just got real. That... Welcome to this, the
340th
episode of The White Book. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Yes, everyone turns the show off now. Actually, if they made it through the quotes, those are the true fans, the true believers, as Stan Lee might say. Oh, well.
They're the patrons, one could say. Yeah,
there are many of those, and I would definitely like to thank some of those in just a moment. But first up, I want to say we are back to Team Hedge Knight. So it's myself, Will, of course, Roy and Aaron, but we have a guest joining us, coming from the other side of the podcast divide. Normally, it seems like we're drafting people into the Kingsguard, so it's a rare treat for Scott to come join Hedge Knight. Welcome.
I'm so honored to be of the lower class now.
Oof. Oof.
Done protecting.
Didn't you just move to the island? You're already kind of lower class.
Yeah. Long Island City compared to Williamsburg? I mean, I guess so.
Yeah.
No comment.
Roy agrees.
It's fine, Roy. You could hate where I live.
I have no strong opinions about Long Island City. I've had neither, in the 7+ years I lived in the city, I had neither good nor bad experience in Long Island City. So, I am neutral. It is definitely better than Williamsburg, but it's not difficult to be better than Williamsburg. Particularly these days, all of the good things about Williamsburg are largely gone, and the bad things about it.
Hey guys, you know what is indisputably worse than both Williamsburg and Long Island City? The restricted list. Let's talk about it.
Oh! Wait. Before we get there, though, patrons, I want to take just a second to thank a few folks that have joined us over the last month or so. So Jared and Steven and Rob's Gaming Table, plus a couple folks that boosted their, in fact, both of them straight up doubled their pledge. much. So, Michael and Sam, well done. Well done, guys. And we've got another drawing. We've got another one of these white book magnets, which is going to head to, let's see.
Can I say one thing real quick, Will, before you announce this? I've been on the white book now for 2 years, and I don't have a white book magnet, so these are very rare.
I've been on the white book for 3 years, and I have a white book literally nothing but jersey.
I don't even have that.
Well, maybe not that, but I did definitely send you guys some promos for Christmas this year.
That is true.
You did.
I don't want to spoil what, but I'm definitely making plans to start annually thanking my podcast co-hosts with some cool stuff.
That's awesome.
Those are
the only cards I own.
So
well done.
That's true. So my inclination there was not to make Will feel bad, but rather to just say to the patrons, winning this is a rare honor that not even members of the White Book podcast have access to.
There we go.
I mean, we could make them ourselves, but they wouldn't be as pretty as if they were touched by the hands of a Mr. Will Lentz.
Exactly. Handcrafted with love and care. Actually, this is the first batch of them that we've ever done, so that's how rare they are.
Hey, Will.
Hot off the presses.
Know what's not handcrafted with love and care? The restricted list.
Okay, but we didn't actually announce the winner.
I'm just doing transitions every other second.
That is to James H. So I still don't want to throw last names out there just in case, but James, I'll get over. Okay. So back to productive. Let's find out how productive this restricted list was.
Here's a hint.
Meh.
Meh?
Meh.
All right, meh. Where do you want to start? Melee, Joust, or Errata?
Let's just start at the top, the way the article itself is laid out. So Melee, you know, let's see, gain Corpse Lake, Khal Drogo, Doran's Game, the Song of the Seven, and then, and those I think all fit very clearly with what has been, established previously for the restricted list. A lot of the extra challenge, extra power stuff, that speeds Melee up to be too fast. And then Kana, Merryweather, and Fleabottom, which I think feel very, very different from the rest. And it strikes me as really odd that Tina is specifically mentioned here about, being a blow to combo decks, but it's the only card out of the now ginormous pool that they've added in Joust to combat these combination decks. So that feels really weird. And then Fleabottom, because it's too efficient in Melee. Also, feels a little weird to just see that there and not just. Okay, there's no way to not talk about both of them at once then. I can't do it. I don't know. I mean, overall, I'm pretty fine with this list. Based on the last Melee tournament I played in, I'm a little worried that the Saltcliff, what's the name, Saltcliff something or other? Sailor, there we go. Yeah, the Saltcliff Sailor, I'm a little tempted at the moment to see there, because I don't think I played or saw a single game where multiple people didn't have the Sailors on the board. I mean, if ubiquity is an issue, then that is probably headed there.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, Soak of Sailor, I think, is busted in Melee, and could possibly be L5R-inspired art or not busted in Joust, too.
Yeah. Though I suppose at least it is somewhat less busted in Melee
conversely, if everyone just plays it, then everyone has piles of stealth and effectively no one has stealth. So maybe that's what they're going for.
I mean, it dies to Blood of the Dragon. So whatever.
Less common in melee.
Yes.
What's... Oh, I meant in Joust. Yeah. So that's why I don't think... And melee's not a format to me. So
Scott.
It's only a format at Gen Con because I'm like, I have free time, so whatever.
I only listened when Scott talked. That was great. Way to go, Scott.
Hilariously, that's what Aaron just does all the time.
It's true.
Whether I'm talking about melee or not.
Aaron's... Oh, I was about to say Aaron's going to play melee at Gen Con this year, but he'll have left by that point. So
yeah, I'm not making it that far.
Oh, melee's after Joust this year?
It's during the cut this year.
So, Jesse can't possibly win Gen Con.
If he's within striking distance of winning the Joust, he won't play the melee.
Well, I'll bet you $5.
He's kind of gone on some records saying he will straight up drop.
If he's in the top 16, I can't imagine doing it. Okay.
Will, would you leave the top 16 to play melee, or would you stay?
I don't think I would leave the top 16. Which that's big. That is saying a lot considering my love of melee. But T16 at Gen Con is hard to pass on.
Watch us immediately go back to the name 2 Gems 1 Jump the second Will wins.
Wait, who are the champs and who's the chump then?
You're just gonna go back to the name and be like, I don't care. You should have never changed. It was coming. I was due.
I mean, technically everyone on this podcast has won a relatively large tournament, so
Sorry.
30 plus people in the North American context. Glazers was 40. Scott's was 40. Mine was 35. 36.
Will's.
Will, what about you?
You got to dial it back too far for me to remember.
It's a CCG. That's why, like, I really have no idea.
Scott is hanging out with Aaron too much.
Ouch. Come on, I had a couple regional wins in first ed. I just don't remember now what the turnout was in the tournaments.
I'm sorry, Will. You know I love you. I'm not as mean as Aaron. I apologize.
I like that you have to claim you're not as mean as me when you've been far meaner so far.
I'm just super outnumbered by the East Coasters right now.
Yeah. Well, Roy is a very kind East Coaster.
That's true. He's borderline Oklahoman.
Ugh. That extremely conservative state, you sure? That's where you're putting Roy?
Well, it was more a joke about his name.
It's true.
Oh.
Arizona is more the land of Roy Rogers, though. That's where the International Roy Rogers Museum is.
Oh, nice. An
International Roy Rogers. Your life is ridiculous. Let's move on.
Well, we still got the Joust restricted list.
It's permanently closed now. I just Googled it.
Oh, yeah. No. Missed opportunity.
We should still get burgers. Well, french fries for you, Roy, because they're vegetarian.
But not vegan.
I mean, you have to be very careful with the right french fries for Roy. Oh, by the way, one of my students called the Wendy's Corporate Center to ask if their fries were vegan and was told absolutely not.
Just
so you know.
Well, at least
I learned something today. Well, I'm out of this episode now, so...
Sorry.
No, I don't.
But I was like, oh, I need to tell my friend. And then now it came up, so I remembered.
I just... Oh my. We're well off track now. So...
that's what I was
thinking. Welcome back to the White Book.
So the Joust
matters, as I said.
We've got that too, right? So we've got a great big beam hammer just swinging and flailing left and right, trying to hit anything.
Nothing was banned.
Do what?
Nothing was banned.
I know.
You could play it all.
I know. I was taking some liberty with the language since, you know, the internet term is the ban hammer. But yeah, we see a lot added to the restricted list and one thing removed. So, you know, that's a plus.
List it all.
That's a List it all. Okay, so we gain the Dornishman's Wife, Littlefinger's Meddling, the Dragon's Steel, Hear Me Roar, the Red Viper, Tower of the Sun, All Men Are Fools, Six Maids in a Pool, and To the Rose Banner.
And coming
and
off.
Then the Hand's Judgment comes off.
Now, why didn't we at least get Bounty of Highgarden on this?
It shouldn't matter.
At least.
It shouldn't matter.
Yeah. I think nuking Littlefinger's Meddling from orbit kind of did it. Like, that was the engine that all of those Darknage combos were powered by. And separating it from almost every combo piece now basically makes it that it's... You could probably pull off an OTK combo, but it's so inconsistent that it becomes the fun combo, you know, the like, oh, this person got this off. Oh, that's cool. They finally managed to pull it off versus the consistent 60 to 75 or higher percent win rate that it was having more recently.
I mean, is there any way to get that much power outside of Martell at this point? I think they nuked every single Tyrell one.
Drown God.
No, I agree. I
can still do
Tyrell, I said.
Oh, Tyrell, not in Tyrell.
Well, there's also the Rata we can probably get to after talking about Drown God.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think we should probably at least do Cudgel in this talk, the errata, for the conversation. So Cudgel was changed to a much more fair card, so you can only Cudgel once a phase, so you can't Valor or Wildfire and kill 15 characters and gain 14 power by everyone calling it Cudgel. The same Cudgel, rather.
Yep.
So that's good. But general, I'm still a little disappointed with this. I mean, I think there are other problems that are coming up, like Doran's game should be restricted with Wars to Come or Ricasso.
Disagree.
They should be separated.
Disagree.
It's a problem.
Hand's Judgment
okay,
just came off the restricted list. What really needs to go the fuck away, and I don't know what you do besides ban it, is someone always tells. Like, 'cause those decks without without that protection from reset are just good decks. It's that, like, they can just shrug off a Valor. Like, if you restrict...
Yes, yeah. I mean, someone always tells, I agree. Someone else tells making the problem. But if you can cancel a Valor,
yeah,
it's too
but
much.
Like, Doran's Game and Ricasso aren't a problem in and of themselves. They don't go off consistently enough, and they can be reset, and there's a million ways to deal with them.
Yeah, if you restrict someone always tells in Doran's game, that's fine with me.
I mean, just...
The schemes... I just ban someone always tells, forget that card, but...
Well, then you have to ban Sans Champ card, and we know that's not happening.
Yeah, oof. That banning the Champ card would be a big...
I mean,
big
it's only the third Champ card that should be banned, right? Perhaps stop making them so strong.
I mean, I don't know. Didn't that one get banned already? Hold on, let me find it here. That archery one, hasn't that effectively been banned? Yeah, Winterfell Archery.
I saw that in a deck the other day.
I played one of in a deck once.
Okay,
it's not horrible. Bad. It's just
bad.
Not
good.
Good, I guess.
It's not. It's better than Words of Wind.
It is.
So,
dude, I don't know. I saw Words of Wind do some pretty amazing stuff. Pretty amazing stuff.
We're talking about
Game of Thrones. You ever see someone try to cancel one effect three times in a row with Words of Wind? And by try to cancel, I mean draw six cards.
I mean, woo-ha.
I mean, it was entertaining. It was entertaining. But that's neither here nor there. I mean, wrapping up my thoughts on the Joust list, I think there's a bit of collateral damage here that I'm not super happy with. I think it still looks to me like FFG's super concerned about the combo decks and hitting a lot of kind of the collateral pieces rather than addressing some of the core issues that make them possible, i.e. things without limits, which you can listen to some of that talk last week with Scott, me, and Darknage. So, yeah, I don't know. And then they effectively ignore homogeneity issues like, Fleabottom and Joust. So not super happy with that. It's really narrow vision on what we've got going on here.
I agree. I also would like Mace and Hightower separated, put them both in the restricted list or restrict them from each other if you want to make... You can't play these two cards together, but these two cards on the restricted list you can play together. Like, if you want to say, I don't know, you could play To the Rose Banner and Hightower in the same deck, but Hightower cannot be played with Mace, that's fine. But that makes things a little more complicated from...
I think multi-tier restrictions get too tough to track and easily like manage at a tournament stuff. Like, I've already been places where I got disqualified because I had multiple restricted cards in the deck. Granted, it was first ed, but whatever. I think that goes up. Plus, it makes deck checks a lot harder on judges to keep multi-tiered stuff straight.
But you know what? Since we were saying they could ban cards, just not champ cards, we could just ban Mace.
Just restrict him in Highgarden, but it doesn't matter. They're clearly not doing any balance restrictions. At least in Joust, the melee restrictions are all balance restrictions. But in Joust, it's not about balance restrictions. It's only about killing combo. There's literally nothing else restricted. So
it's more of a public perception sort of thing. It's a PR list for Joust, right? Because the community is so up in arms about combo.
Maybe we can go a few weeks without talking about it.
Eventually.
A man can dream.
And then we could talk about how horrible Mace is, and then we could talk, and then they could PR ban Mace, or restrict Mace with Hightower.
Or maybe the errata stuff. They've actually opened up errata as a possible.
Let's talk about those.
Yeah. We just talked about the cudgel, so the other one. I don't have the text in front of me, so I'm not sure, Will, if you have it.
Yeah, I've got it. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. It's to go forward, you must go back. Now reads dominance action. Each player may shuffle his or her hand, parentheses, of at least one card, close parentheses, into his or her deck. Each player that does draws 5 cards. And basically, it's just to clarify that the card works the way, you know, probably 90% of people when they first read it thought it worked. Right, where you're shuffling a different card into your deck to get your new hand, and to go forward, you must go back, goes to your discard pile. There was some awkwardness the way it was originally worded, where our best rules authority seemed to all agree that it could be the last card in your hand, and it would shuffle itself back into your deck. So this is just clarity, really. So I'm okay with that.
That's fine. I don't think this card was changing the world anyway. It's very good, but
I think you're wrong. I think being able to do it with no other cards in hand was extraordinarily strong and nearly broken.
I thought it was strong after playing it first player. I don't know. I decided in the end I wanted to cut it for some other events instead. So
even before the errata?
Yeah.
And this is why you haven't won since the CCG.
Probably.
No, I think it's very good either way, but it is a one card differential. Like, I agree that this should be the case, but I don't think it's like I think it's game changing what's in the combo.
The issue is that you have to keep 3 cards in hand after marshalling now, which is not easy for Targ. Or be damn sure you're not losing Intrigue, right? And then there's real risk involved if it can't just be the last card. And if it can just be the last card, then it's counting.
That's fair. Most Targ, I think, now is running towards counting.
Yeah, but you didn't have to when it could be the last card. Like, John had already figured out some stupid bullshit with it, like where you can just run one counting and the extra meddling, and then you get, like, functionally 2 threat turns and 2 counting turns with it. You just play everything out. And then all your burn cards are in the discard pile for the next round, so you have no problem with that. It was pretty silly.
Okay. Well, talking about cards changing, do you want to talk about new cards?
There is one last little bitty thing here about the errata. Rottas that I'm just curious about. Do you guys know, especially First Ed, because we did get a few Erratas in First Ed over the years, right? Like, it was not FFG's prime thing. It was just kind of to fix weird interactions, right? But we did get a couple. Do you recall, did we ever get updated images like this? Like FFG posted here? I'm just wondering because I don't remember ever seeing them post updated images like this before. And I'm curious and slightly hopeful that maybe that means they're going to do some kind of like POD eroded card sort of thing. No.
I don't know either.
Okay. Well, that's fair. I'll just keep my hopes up. We can move on to the new cards, then. New cards. This is gonna be a trick. FFG really dumped a lot on us this week. So we had half an hour or so of the chapter pack, or sorry, restricted list. We'll see how we can do through a chapter pack now. So we've got the first pack of the what's the title of this cycle? A Dance of Shadows.
Oh, something. The pack is called the Shadow City.
Right.
The Shadow City.
So yeah. We'll give it a whirl. Who wants to start us off? I know Roy already had some thoughts earlier about directing Aaron towards certain houses this week. But who kicks us off with our neutral?
Our Scott here? Loves this card. So it should
does
absolutely
love this card.
Be
so go ahead, Scott.
Sure, I don't think it's super great, but I think it's super fun. Varamir Sixskins, the neutral character, 5 cost, military icon, 3 strength, and he's a wildling. He is the reaction. After the challenges phase begins, until the end of phase, Varamir Sixskins gains, and then in parentheses choose one. And here are the options. First option, the bear trait, and gains +5 strength. Option 2, the eagle trait. And an intrigue icon and insight. Option 3, the cat trait, a power icon and stealth. Option 4, the wolf trait, and intimidate, and gains +2 strength. I guess we're grading him on his own, away from the other neutrals. I think he is good. Some decks will find room for him. The 5 cost unique is the awkward slot, because it's expensive but not great haulable. But he's a wildling, so you definitely want him in your wildling decks. And he can have any icon, so you're effectively getting a tricon. You can get some draw, you can get some intimidate. So some decks, I think, will find space for one of him. And he's cute.
I don't think he's cute. I think he's really good.
I meant, like, it's cute, but I do think he's good, too. Yes. It's just finding slot for a 5-cost unique is often hard.
Yes. I mean, especially because Littlefinger is in that same spot, right? And you're only getting one.
Yeah. He can't fit in the same deck as right. Littlefinger 95% of the time.
I mean, Stark runs him. No.
Maybe because they do like to draw.
Yeah, Stark not so desperate for draw that they're just like, I'll take anything that gives me extra cards.
Maybe I'll come back around and try Brotherhood again.
Yeah.
Gives me a lot of keywords.
I mean, probably since this is based on the 5th book, right? We should be getting a good number of wildling characters this cycle. So, yeah. I mean, this we could see the rejuvenation, the revitalization, there's the word I'm looking for, of the Brotherhood agenda. So, I don't know. This card's fine. Like, it's thematic.
Hey, Roy, how sad are you that you can't put Sir Pounce on it?
Pretty damn sad. I'm pretty sad. I'm sad. I can put a lot of
double cat
things.
Yeah, but you can make it a double cat.
A cat on a cat.
I don't know. Now that you got me thinking about it, I don't know if I like that better than like a cat riding an eagle. I don't know. There's a lot of good options.
Keep the cat away from the bear, please.
There's a way you can get a direwolf attachment.
I mean, he can be a wolf. He can be a wolfy direwolf.
There we go. I mean, he's a huge flavor win. So can I give him like an A for flavor, and then like a I don't know B minus maybe because he's neutral and fighting for a hard cost slot for practical terms.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he goes in aggro-y decks that have great hauls.
Would yeah, definitely. But also, would like your heavy intimidate Martelli decks like him? Like your Martell or your Barra with all the intimidate? Like he's an extra challenge that can have intimidate without any extra work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Plus slap's
yeah.
hard.
And Martell has this way to not really stress that though.
I mean, yeah, exactly.
Like being able to jump in with this one card, literally whatever the hell you want, is pretty good. Like, what icon do you need? Do you want draw or do you want stealth or
yes.
what?
I think he's good. I never said he wasn't good. I when I say cute, I meant like yeah. flavor wise, he's awesome. These traits don't matter whatsoever, but they're still.
Cat trait matters.
Awesome.
I'm just going to let you know. It does.
How does the cat trait.
I mean, if Roy wins Gen Con, that'll be part of his agenda.
It'll be the cat that was promised. I think it's a C+. I think it's really good, but it's super hard to fit.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am, too. It's really good, but you can't fit it in that many decks. The deck has to want this type of thing.
He's got some... Yeah. He's got some real threat of activation, too. You make a, like... Oh, it's after the challenge phase begins. That's obnoxious. Never mind. He's terrible in Martell. Oh, that's so depressing. I thought it was just an action.
Oh,
my mistake.
Yeah, I don't think he's like...
Oh, yeah. I totally misread that, too.
Yeah. The threat of activation. Without the threat
yeah.
of activation, that sucks.
I think it was... Yeah, toward the end of the phase, or in like in Dom, you bounce him with Arianger, she's still there. Like,
yeah.
that's okay, right. but it's not
going down
great.
To C. Only for Brotherhood decks. Wait, I thought
so
I'm Stark,
Roy,
man.
You're the Stark.
Did you guys rate it?
Glazer should be the
yeah,
Stark guy.
They debated about
wait, that. I'll read Stark, but did you guys rate Varen?
Oh, he's a C-.
Scott? Okay.
I'll stay with C+.
Bolton Flare. It is House Stark, non-loyal. 3/3. Military and Intrigue, Ally and House Bolton, with Shadow 2. Forced Interrupt. When the challenge phase ends, choose and kill a character with the lowest printed cost, cannot be saved. Northern Armory. Non-loyal economy. Non-limited economy. House Stark loyal, cost 2 the North. Northern Armory cannot stand. Northern Armory. Kneel Northern Armory to choose and stand a Stark character, plus 1 income. Stark, I'm not sure how much Stark actually gives a crap about Bolton Flare. I don't think it's a really good Stark card. Like, they're going to have trouble. I mean, maybe those super heavy attrition decks if they ever come back, but those have cycled out of the meta pretty effectively. This might be in Martell Wolf, but it's probably just not good enough to fit in that deck, given how much other important stuff there is in that. And the Northern Armory is fantastic, because Stark is... seemingly getting cards that tell you that you can only run Stark cards in order to get like super powerful effects, in which case Northern Armory gets a real big boost. I think could not stand in the standing phase is probably enough, like so that you can find other shenanigans to stand if you really want to. But like whatever, get some economy in a house that really needs it and get a stand is pretty good.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think Bolton Flare doesn't have a home right now, but eventually there will be a home in a deck like Martell Wolf, maybe more attrition out of Stark if they get the cards for that. probably doesn't have a home in Night's Watch Wolf. They don't really kill that many things, but you can't.
How often is there not just a character with low, with three or lower printed cost in play? Like, almost always, right?
Yeah, I mean, it might have a home in Night's Watch Wolf. I haven't tested it yet, but being able to take Recruiter for the Watch, one of their weenies, then kill off the other weenie with the Bolton Flayer at the end, I mean, could be pretty powerful.
Like, if you ward one thing, and then they're just sitting there with, like, I don't know, Marjorie at three cost. Remember, you choose which three coster you would kill at that point, right? Like, how often does your opponent literally just have no one with cost three or less in play?
I think it can be very good, and
it
also sets
up
Mogged
and Ramsey
very
but himself,
well.
Right? At the worst case?
The worst case kills himself.
I mean, which isn't great.
And if you're first player, he can get rid of your second sons. I don't know. I think I like him more than I did at the start of this conversation. Really good on setup?
But wait, second sons depends on who the player, which... But the player order is...
First player. If you're first player, yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, all that stuff
is... I'm looking at it and wondering if maybe that Lanny with the Bolton Splash deck, you know, could start forming up a little more here. I don't know.
He's okay in that, I guess, but I don't think that's a T1 deck.
Works. I think Harrenhal doesn't exist because Louise decided to kill it. Thanks, Louise.
Wee.
We can restrict that with Flea Bottom or just ban Flea Bottom. But anyway, but onto the economy, I think this is a sign of things to come, as I mentioned on the last podcast, that this economy is possibly a game changer for the way we think about building decks, which is something that's really exciting. And we could debate at another time, probably, if that is good or bad for the game, because I think this is a tempo hit, but if your deck can afford tempo hits or non-limited economy, that is huge as well. Still good on setup. And stand is really good. I mean, think about having a stand on Fast Eddie. And especially with what I was talking about, if you could have things like Favor of the Old Gods, I still don't think a Stark-only deck works, but something like Seal. So if you could Fast Eddie and then Fast Eddie again, that's
more
power just
let's
off
not
for
forget,
now.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well,
No, go ahead, Roy.
But I think Northern Armory, compared to the other one we have in this pack, I think is much less of a tempo hit, particularly early, because you have that stand, right? So even if you're playing less characters on the board, you're getting more out of, for at least one turn, those characters on the board. So it makes it easier for Stark to play this and set up for a long-term or middle-term game, which I think Stark has desperately wanted tools to sort of not extend the game too long, but not have a short game, but get that sweet, like, 4 or 5 plot mid-range game. And this is a huge tool to enable that. And I really, really like that. I like that this has this second use that mitigates the tempo hit of playing a 2-gold location that doesn't immediately provide economy.
Yeah. I mean, Roy, you were basically making the same point that I was going to make. I would maybe even go so far as to say that this is just flat, not a tempo hit, that this is probably a tempo game. Like, you know, you're spending 2 gold on this. So, like, if we're looking at tempo as the effective use of your characters to participate in challenges, right, revolving around challenges, then that 2 gold character that you would have gotten out of this is almost certainly inferior to whatever extra use you get out of this stand, right? Your Robs, your Eddards, your Johns, your Cats, like whatever it might be.
This is quite good. This is, I think, much better than the one that we will have coming out.
I think both of these cards are really good. I just think the Stark one is like as close to busted as an economy card can be. It's very, very strong, and I think it opens up a variety of deck building. It's exactly what Stark needed right now, I think. Like, a lot of Stark themes have been waiting for more gold to be in flux, to get what's the term I'm looking for? To flow through the faction, and this lets that happen.
So when is the last time Stark got two cards this good in a single pack? Not since like the box.
Didn't they get two cards in a pack at once? Am I crazy? Whatever.
Yeah. A while.
I don't know. Yeah.
I'm fine with that.
Stark gets a B plus.
I'm going to go a little higher. Yeah. I'm going to give Stark an A minus. I think we're going to be seeing a lot of Northern Armories over the second half of this year. And I'm pretty excited to see what Stark players and Stark builders can do with this card. So I'm going to go with an A minus.
I think I'm probably in the B plus range at the moment. Maybe Flair will surprise me later, but I do think most of this is on the back of the armory. Non-limited economy. Cost aside, I think is going to be a game changer, but maybe that's a different episode, as Scott said.
Can you imagine setting up three Northern Armories, a Rose Road, and a Chud?
Living the dream.
It's not that hard in Stark. You got a lot of good two cost stuff.
Set up Rickon and a reducer Chud,
or Bran and Hodor, and a Rose Road.
You're made.
Two Northern Armories and a Rose Road. Yeah.
Two Northern Armories. Oh. All right. So who's going to do Tyrell?
They remain Will's favorite faction. So
okay.
Right.
The making me.
I mean, I'll read the Tyrell cards if you want me to, but I just know you love Tyrell, Will.
We can, you know what, we can change it up a little bit this week. Tell you what, why don't you take Tyrell, Roy?
All right, well, one of these cards I had the pleasure of reading but not discussing on Second Sons. Scheming Septon, which is a two-cost character, Tyrell, loyal, green and blue icons, two strength. It has the 7 trait, and it has Shadow 2. And for the people who haven't been following along, Shadow 2 means you marshal this card face down into shadows for 2 gold. As an action, pay 2 gold to bring it into play face up. This card also has the challenges action. Draw 1 card, and gain 2 gold. Then place Scheming Septon on the top of your deck. Limit once per phase. And Marjorie's Influence is a 1 gold, non-unique, condition, non-loyal attachment. It's terminal and has an action. While attached characters participating in a challenge, kneel Marjorie's influence and pay 1 gold to stand attached character and remove it from the challenge. Both of these cards are really strong, I think. Scheming Septon is just a straight up good stuff Tyrell card that I immediately am already planning to take cards out of all of my pre-existing Tyrell decks and put at least 2, probably 3. Scheming Septons, just what this card does, it powers Flea Bottom, it powers Breaking Ties, it gives you a card and gold, it is redundancy for your ambush effects and your mace triggers if you don't have Hightower. Wait,
how does it power Flea Bottom?
You sacrifice it, you bring it out,
you can discard it
to reserve, you can discard it through the Amelia effects, bring it out. It's a 2-cost. It's a good efficient 2-cost character. It's a 2-for-2 bicon. Like,
man, hey, you know, it also. Oh, God, that's real good. Yep, you're right.
And it constantly. I thought a lot about this card, Aaron. You guys didn't want to talk about it on Second Sons, but I've thought a lot about this card. Like, there's just a lot of things to do with it. Some of them really obvious. Some of them less obvious. But the fact that it's card advantage and, you know, reducing what you draw down to just this plus 1 other card is still fine because you're still going to see a third card that round because of Scheming Septon's ability. But of course, with Old Town, you can guarantee an Old Town trigger. You can know exactly how much your Hightower Spy is going to be. There's just so many things that Scheming Septon does. He's just a ridiculously strong card. And that's even not counting the shadow mechanic, which I think we should probably talk about more generally in a minute. But Marjorie's Influence is also really good. It's also a really flexible card because you can put it on your opponent's characters and constantly removing them. So if the Mountain or Tywin or one of the million great Greyjoy characters are giving you trouble, well, they're going to only be able to participate in, or you're going to control which challenges they can be in, right? It's And you can put it on your own character to be like, okay, well, you want to defend here? Well, nope. They're standing, they're leaving, and now I'm going to go win the intrigue challenge when you thought that I wanted to win the power challenge this round, or vice versa. It's just a really flexible card.
Then it's participating is kind of silly.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is just a really strong pack for Tyrell. So, I'm.
Can you? Is there any pack you can't say that about?
The pack that they got. We reviewed it. The one with
We review every pack, right?
I know. But what's the one? This will be answered fiercely. Pack wasn't very good.
yeah.
So.
Okay.
So that was like the last pack of the last cycle, wasn't it? I'll look it up. You guys talk.
I think there is one downside to the Scheming Septon that you didn't note, Roy. It's definitely not enough to balance it, but I looked at this at first and I was like, oh, the 7. Awesome. Maybe we're gonna see FFG push the Faith Militant agenda to be relevant in houses that it thematically makes sense for, instead of the current ones where it doesn't. And then I went, oh, wait a minute, no, that ability, no, I would definitely never play that with Faith Militant, so never mind.
No, also, like, they've already proved they don't care about things like that. Like, Barra and Greyjoy want to go together, right?
It's actually not unthematic for FFG there to be a Faith Militant Barra deck, right? Considering one of the central
Barra and Greyjoy going together, not Barra Faith Militant. Barra Kraken is what Scott was talking about. He's not
right. But the two, I'm going back to Will. The two best factions for Faith Militant right now are Stark, which doesn't make a huge amount of thematic sense, except the fact that the Tullys are in Stark, and Barra does thematically make sense for there to be a 7th theme because the central conflict, one of the central conflicts of the whole third book, is the tension between the R'hllor faction and the 7 worshipping faction within Stannis' army, and that continues into the 5th book.
Cool story.
Right. Though nearly all of the
Hey, Roy, can you tell me how that really cool story ends?
As it were.
No, I can't, but I'll find out next summer. I actually found the pack that Tyrell did not get good cards in.
Yeah.
It was the Faith Militant, so it fits our discussion, where they got Highgarden and Refugee and Arbor Queen.
Wait, Highgarden Refugee is good.
Arbor Queen.
So you just picked out two good cards.
Highgarden Refugee is not particularly good in the current meta.
So it's one gold card. It's a good card.
I'm not feeling the ref. But
yeah, that's a good card. Like,
okay. All right.
Arbor Queen is also solid. Like, Arbor Queen is a lot of really good decks. It's just a better Barra card than it's a draw card.
But anyway, two.
All right.
To these cards, I think Marjorie's Influence, do they really need more of these effects? We know Tyrell does this. You're going to give us too much. And eventually there's going to be the most MPA deck in the world that just doesn't let anything dissipate. But anyway, Scheming Septon, I think, is really good. It's just competing for slots in Tyrell in the weenie slot, but I think you find room for this because the 2-cost slot isn't the most crowded of those weenie slots, and it's generically better than a lot of the other ones. I think somehow it's become that maybe the military icon, at least for the Chuds, isn't the favorite icon of non-knights. Tyrell, that they don't have a lot of it, a lot of redundancy there, and they do have more redundancy in the intrigue power icons. So this might struggle in those places, but considering how good the other Chuds and cards they are getting are, I still think you probably find room for this in many, many Tyrell decks, if not the majority. So B+.
A.
Like, I if this did nothing but give me extra phases to trigger Mace, like if it was just a Shadows with no other ability, I'd be like, okay. The fact that it gives me gold so that I can, like, then trigger Mace in some other phase is just ridiculous.
Right, well, the fact that it does this and then it consistently says you're going to get a non-marshalling, non-challenges, non-dominance, because those are the 3 phases you can almost always guarantee a Mace trigger currently, it now basically says every turn you're going to draw a card that lets you in a non marshalling phase or any of those two phases trigger Mace. So that means that's adding a fourth power consistently to Mace, which is very, very, very strong.
Holy shit. I cannot find a chapter pack where Turtle didn't get at least one really good card.
Yeah.
But I think we should talk a little bit before we jump.
I'm back to guard.
We jump into Shadow. Realm.
And it's like Lord Renly's Red. All right. All right. Oh.
All right. Guess whining about Tyrell. Listen to the last seconds on this episode.
It's the entire last two cycles where they get something like really damn good in every pack. I'm now into the first two cycles, and I'm just like, all right, maybe Turian's Chain. Nope, Renly's Pavilion. Continue. Okay.
Anyway, Shadows as a mechanic. What do we all think about it?
Let's do that after the entire chapter.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
So, speaking of the chapter pack, this is your house because Builders is in this house. So, why don't you read Night's Watch?
I already read
make him
Tyrell.
Two in a row?
You should read it, Scott.
Yeah.
Fine. I was trying to give Roy his thing.
My thing these days is Tyrell. So.
Okay. You want me to read it? I'll read it. So, first we have Jano Slint. He's a 6-cost character. Intrigue power icons, 5-cost, the ally traded. He has a Shadows keyword. Shadow cost is 0, and he is the forced reaction. After Jano Slint comes out of Shadows, sacrifice a Night's Watch character. And we have the event, 3-cost event, Fresh Recruits, which has the action. Search your deck for a Ranger, a Builder, and a Steward character. Reveal them and add them to your hand. Shuffle your deck.
How did they get an event that draws them 3 cards?
Purchase them 3 cards.
Yeah, it lets them choose 3 cards.
Yeah, so Jano Slint is insane. The cost value there is ridiculous. Very happy that it does have to be a Night's Watch character, at least. Otherwise, it makes it even better with Night's Watch Wolf and Ward. But this is going to be in almost every single Night's Watch deck you see, because a 5-coster for essentially
6-cost.
A 5-strength rather, for essentially 2 and a sack. And with Flea Bottom, sacks can be good, because Flea Bottom is a fair card. And Fresh Recruits, it's net 2 cards. And you find the 2 cards you want, and there is a lot of variability within these traits. 3 cost is a bit steep for an event, but considering a lot, if not the majority of Night's Watch decks are now going to be running Littlefinger's Meddling for Sambrax's Champ event, you probably are finding room for a couple of these because the effect is very good. It lets you put in more one-ups for a little more niche characters. Like, you might even run Spare Boot now if you're, like, in a pinch and you're running two of this event. You have one Spare Boot and you're like, oh, my John has this negative attachment on him. Let me go find Spare Boot with this event and I'll get two other guys
Get the dupe John and... Yeah.
Yeah, dupe for John, dupe Halder.
No, you can't. The builder is Spare Boot, so...
Oh, yeah, you can find a dupe for that, John. But, yeah, I was just saying, in general, you can find a dupe for Halder, a dupe for your...
No, you can't find a dupe for Halder if you're getting Spare Boot.
If we're going off your theory, that, yeah. But I know what you're saying.
But then you would get, like, what's his name? Dolorset or whatever.
Yeah.
With an intrigue for fun and just whatever bullshit, yeah. Yeah, it's completely...
Well, the ability to, like, do Fresh Recruits in the challenges phase, fetch Ed, is super powerful. Super powerful. It's a really good card. But, I mean, Night's Watch needs good cards again, because it's definitely really...
I think it's the house right now.
Suppressed.
The worst.
I think you're wrong. Night's Watch Wolf is still really good.
Yeah, Night's Watch Wolf is extremely strong. But I don't think this goes to Night's Watch Wolf.
No, but, no, like, Janos does.
I think
Janos definitely Janos does.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, Janos is the target in the game. Just Janos' best target is Yoren.
Oh, he loves Yoren. But anyway, I think this is an A for Night's Watch. I think both of these are super good.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just incredibly efficient. Like, how much more is there to say than that?
Well, he also creates a 2-card combo with Ward and what is the 0-cost Night's Watch event that gives somebody the Night's Watch?
Sworn to the Watch.
Yeah, Sworn to the Watch. So you steal their character, put Sworn to the Watch on them, and then you sack them with Janos Slynn.
So yeah, really damn good. And A.
Yep, that covers it, A.
Yep, best defense cards in a good long while.
Janos goes in Builders?
He might go in Builders.
Sure, go in Builders?
So that's an entry.
Yes.
Positive for Builders.
Like, do you even have the Rangers, or are you just getting a Builder, a Steward, and calling it a day?
You can also fetch the Old Force Hunter. Yeah, you just get true. But just be able to get a Builder of your choice, and Ed is pretty good.
Okay.
I mean, you might run two, but the problem with Builders now is Builders are super full because it wants the Bratz event. So
you run three of that and two of this, and then you might have to run two meddling. Or I guess just whatchamacallit. Obviously, Trade Routes will do the same
thing. Trade Routes says all the things you need to do. But
I just want to clarify for this sake then. You can pick and choose. The wording on this doesn't require you to find one of each.
No, I think you need to find one of each.
Really?
That's what I was thinking from the wording, but
the wording is like that, but there's also a ruling about search in general that if you search for something and you cannot find it, you can fail to find it.
Yeah.
The effect will start looking building. Yeah. So I think it's fine, but it's worded poorly.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Like
you can still find all three, but Builders runs two Rangers, countless number of Builders, and 2 to 3 Eds. So
draws like a fucking monster.
Yeah.
And at that point you might run 1x Amon because
yeah, and some builds are running 1x Amon, so yeah. The ones that the builds are running Valor are running 1x Amon, so
yeah.
Valor Morghulis.
Right. Alright. Yeah, it's an A. Christ, that's good.
Yeah. So Will, you have the yellow.
That gives me Bera. Oh, jeez.
Would you rather
Lapis? Okay, so we've got Shadow.
Your call.
You've already read something. I'm fine. Yeah. All right, Shadow Priestess. This is.
Oh, wait. Before we do this, by the way, the last chapter pack that Terrell didn't get at least one really good card is True Steel, the last chapter pack of the very first cycle of the game. And even then, I'm just not counting Butterbumps as a good card. Or a Gift of Arbor Red.
Yeah, those are just kind of middling.
Yeah, I went through.
They're not actively bad.
Right, but they're like when you compare that to everything else they get in literally every other pack, they're the worst too.
At that point in the game, we would have rated Butterbumps like an A.
Yeah,
I mean, we probably did. He was a cheap draw.
He was still played in Tyrell decks as recently as the beginning of this year. So,
I mean.
I still play Moonboy.
Because Terrell, they don't get Terrell level cards, right? All right. So literally, I'm on the Road to Winterfell, which is the second chapter pack. I'm now on the first chapter pack where they got Pleasure Barge. If you consider those cards good, there has been no chapter pack in this game's history that Terrell has not gotten at least good cards.
Well, you can tell who's the favorite.
That is really silly.
Okay, so this pretty priestess.
Go ahead.
Yes, so we've got the Shadow Priestess, a 3-cost non-loyal and non-unique. Strength 3, intrigue and power icons, ally and relore. She has Shadow 3, and the reaction after Shadow Priestess comes out of shadows, choose and kneel a character without attachments. And then they also get the Stormlands Fiefdom. That's going to be a loyal 2-cost non-unique location. Westeros trait, action, kneel Stormlands Fiefdom to move one power from a character or location to its owner's faction card, plus one income. We've got our non-limited income there for Bera. It is interesting, I think, to see both of these come out in this first pack. Probably in the two houses, most folks would say, kind of had some income issues. So that that is going to push some stuff there. It's definitely... Oh, go ahead, Roy.
I also think it's the reverse of the third cycle when Danny released all those income cards, where I think Barra and Stark were last.
Oh, so. I think you're right. Yeah.
So, parallelism.
Yeah.
I think it's clear. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I do like both of these cards. I think the fiefdom here has less just kind of wow factor than the Stark one. I think it's going to take a little longer to have a big impact on the game, but I think could definitely be used to bleed some stuff out. It could be useful for some Faith Militant builds or things that want to run things long.
Storm's End?
Yeah, I was going to say it could be used to protect your own power from something like Storm's End, but I'm always a little less enthused about kind of weird moving pieces to try to protect my own power rather than trying to harm my opponent. But Shadow Priestess I really like. She's some very reasonable Neil for Barra that divorces itself from the requirement to have core Mel in play. So I think that's actually going to be really nice for consistency's sake in Barra.
Yeah, I think anyone decks that can afford the extra $2 for kneeling anything and an extra icon will take the place of the Ishai Priestess, right? Like, it is 5 gold essentially instead of 3 for the kneel with the body, but you're getting an extra icon
and extra strength. It doesn't die the Bedwest Blade.
And if you haven't,
yeah,
the Ishai Priestess is 3.
You don't get the
is
double.
It? Okay, it's 3 strength. No.
You don't get it.
You could just marshal this,
the way
though.
You do with the priestess.
You marshal this for 3. If you have Mela, though, but it doesn't make a difference. You might as well save the 2 gold.
You don't get its reaction.
Although it makes being first player matter less.
When she comes out of shadows, you can kneel 20.
Mm-hmm.
You can kneel 2 things, essentially, if you have Mel and this out. So it's still good. It's just... You have to take into account that you're paying $2 for an icon and to be able to kneel bigger things.
But Scott, you didn't mention that you can do it in the standing phase. So they stand their best dude and you kneel it immediately.
It's going to be hard to have gold.
Wait, it's
gold that way. Yes.
I mean,
in no trade harder than world, the challenge where... phase, really, right?
I guess so, but then you're using the body in the challenge phase. 3 strength Vicon is a pretty decent body.
That's fair.
It's a super strong body. Like, this is one of, I think, the strongest cards in the pack. Like, it's super flexible. You can just marshal it if you need the Mel trigger. You can do the challenge phase kneel. You can do standing phase kneel. You can do a variety. Like, you can, in the standing phase, kneel Aria, so they can't aggressively Valor you. There's just like a lot of really cool plays that the Shadow Priestess opens up, and it creates consistency in a Barra theme, which I feel like one of the problems in second edition is this kind of soft control has been largely absent, and I would really love to see Neil re-enter the game in a really kind of aggressive way, because I feel like it would solve some of the problems of the meta, and I feel like Neil, particularly with the amount of stand that's in second edition, is very balanced, because there are answers. Like, in a Neil meta, there's a whole bunch of answers that you can pack. In a meta that's not ready for Neil, you can just run over them. So I think that's an interesting... What, if there's more redundancy?
You can't. There's, like, Tyrell just says Neil doesn't matter. That's like Tyrell just reads.
Well, but you forget, Wama's winning deck isn't running the stand girls.
Yeah, but it's like they don't have it. They have no answer.
How are you standing stuff with Tyrell?
How are you stopping Mace at all?
But Mace is usually
Mace
is not popping your best characters out usually.
What does it matter? How are you, like, you can, right? Like, there's literally nothing that says like Mace is grabbing ridiculous amounts of power. Like, still, he's grabbing his 3 or 4 power a turn, and then, like, your most important guy is still going to be standing.
Right, but okay, Renly gets infinitely worse if you can't stack power on him. Marjorie gets worse if you can't stack power on her. You also can't dupe her, so she's vulnerable. Same with
you dupe her?
Him. The only character who consistently stands in Tyrell that you can safely stack power on and you don't need Mace on is Randall, and there's a million answers to Randall right now. I'm not saying that, you know, Tyrell isn't good, but, like, there are...
Have you played that matchup a lot? Because I have. Because I played our Barra deck for quite a while online, and it's got just legitimately no shot against Tyrell. Like, it is, like, right. In 2080 matchup. It is, like, a hilariously bad match.
Okay, I apologize, Aaron. We're talking past each other here. I was talking about a world where Danny starts aggressively printing Neil cards again, and this at least seems to me as if signaling that he is printing. This is an aggressive Neil card, right? This, like, okay, it has a limit in the characters without attachments, but there's a lot of shit that this Neils, and it Neils it in what times in which Neil has not been present, in phases, excuse me, that Neil has not really been present. And it creates redundancy and creates consistency. You don't have to rely on Mel. If something bad happens to Mel, you still have three more largely free targeting and body-based Neil in your deck. Like, it's very, these are very strong cards. I think it signals that Baron Neil will help a lot in the meta. It may not solve all the problems of Tyrell, but it's definitely a powerful and I think positive force in the meta if Danny is really pushing it this cycle, which I hope he is after seeing this card.
I'm excited to give it a try.
If we get more of it, that would be very, very nice. But assuming we don't, all Barra doing good does is make Tyrell better. Because they can answer almost every other house. So, like, all that does is push the one house they can answer, which is already ahead of the pack, further ahead of the pack.
Okay, so what is it with the three-cost slot and Barra?
It's that.
Why does Danny just, like...
It's a theme.
They do
giving Barra... Are all their good things that should be chuddy bodies in the three cost slot?
This sets up at two.
Yeah. Can set up at two, but then you're still paying three for the body later. And the
I think this is actually a key difference, I think, between people who played first edition and Scott, who only played second edition. Like, Scott, I think you're undervaluing Shadows, like setting things up at two, and particularly now it's an any phase action, like just the flexibility of that is really, really strong. And yeah, in a trade roots world, I think particularly three gold is not going to be a problem because you don't have to do it until you're ready to do it.
That's affecting your concern. Your plot deck. So Barra wants control plots too. Like Barra would rather run 2x. Forced March, but now they can't run 2x Forced March because it's only 4 gold, and 4 gold doesn't let you do all that much when you're paying for things like this, and most of your bodies cost 3. 3 is
You guys are missing the problem here. The problem isn't that Barra wants 4 gold plots or control plots, because you know who else loves control plots? Martell. The problem is Barra got super shit econ.
You got a good econ.
Like, everything... They got an okay econ card. They didn't get, like, anything that smooths out the, like, variance of their enough to, like, because the assuming Barra gets a reasonable amount of shadows, then your, whatever they're called, the zero-cost reducers get worse, right? Like, because they don't reduce for shadows. So if those get worse, then, like, any other econ, like the Stormwind's Fiefdoms, are functionally replacing those in your Shadows heavier decks, and now you have the same econ problem, because they don't, like, and even if these are all good, they're functionally still playing catch-up to the houses that have good plus 2 gold econ locations.
No, I completely agree.
Of which Tyrell has, like, 4.
I actually
4,
think that the zero drops get stronger in a, because you're reducing things and saving gold.
Maybe. Depends how much you have to play. Depends how much draw you have at that point. It gets real iffy. Although, those cards go real well with the Stormwind Fiefdom. Because you can cheapen that, right?
Yeah. I was actually going to get to the point that the problem with this three-cost slot being such a big theme in Barra is that assumes you need more gold than the average faction, right? Because the average faction has these type of bodies in the 2-cost slot, which is one difference in gold, but then you're going to the faction that is the worst economy in the game. So it doesn't seem even in that sense. You're giving them the hardest weenies to put out, which would be fine if they were in Tyrell, because Tyrell is the best economy in the game, but now you're giving to the worst economy in the game.
Yeah, I could see that.
And before this, I think Stark had the worst economy in the game, but Stark's non-limited is much better than Barrow's non-limited.
Stark's non-limited is much... I could see that.
I think it'll be much more impactful.
It's a much better location, because that's not a strict tempo loss. This is a strict tempo loss in Barrow.
Yep.
Right. And econ matters significantly less when you're not playing control. A lot of the reason that Barrow has econ problems is because they want to play control, and it's really hard to play control without resources. Yep.
No, I agree. Like this is essentially 5 gold for an eel and a decent body. Which if it was a 2-cost character that I could set up or just marshal for mail and at a 1 less strength, I'd be so much happier. But it's still very, very good, don't get me wrong. I think just because they need the economy and the priestess is here, I'm still going to give them a B, but I think these are examples of the Barrow problems.
Yep, I don't disagree.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and kick it over to the next house. We've still got half a pack to...
We didn't actually rate.
You guys didn't give...
Oh, we didn't. You're right. You know, I think this is a good but not great pack for Barra. I'm feeling probably a solid B. I like the Neil redundancy. We'll see how the Fiefdom shakes out.
Okay, so who's doing Lanny? I guess that means Aaron's doing.
I was gonna say, is anybody else rating?
I'll give this a B plus.
Yeah, I was gonna go A minus. I think both of these cards, even when they're not totally great, are important for Barra.
Okay, Aaron, Lanny.
Okie dokie. As I stop editing our Barra deck, Sir Robert Strong is a non-loyal Lannister character with 6 costs for 8 strength, military icon only, Kingsguard and Knight, Shadow 5. After Sir Robert Strong comes out of Shadows, choose and kill a kneeling character with printed cost 5 or lower. Beneath the Bridge of Dream is a loyal Lannister event with Shadow 0. When you choose a plot card to reveal in the plot phase, instead, shuffle your used pile into your plot deck and choose a plot card to reveal at random. Until the end of the round, increase the gold value on your revealed plot card by 2. What happens to the used pile after? Does that just automatically unuse all your plots for the rest of the game?
Yeah. Well, not, I mean, all the ones that were used at that point.
No, you just, it basically restarts your plot deck.
Yeah.
With this reveal.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah, it restarts your plot deck.
This card is uber trash, I think.
Yeah.
Like, I think this is the garbagest of the garbage. Robert Strong's really good, though, and should probably go on most Lannister decks. 5 cost or lower is a lot. It's 7 costs, but, like, yeah. If you're Lannister, that's the only thing you have going for you, right? You have a decent amount of gold.
I mean, that kills a pretty huge tempo swing. A 7 gold.
It kills Danny.
Body and get a huge body.
It wrecks the face off.
She does have to be kneeling, so you can play around it.
So you can just never... I mean, only for now, right? Like, once there's more Shadows cards. Like, if you're never using Ariana in a challenge, at that point you might as well just ambush in whatever you're going to do, and now Ariana's useless.
True enough.
Yeah, he's very good.
Yeah, he's very, very strong. Barra Lion, man. Barra Lion.
Yeah, might be a thing again.
I mean,
so, yeah, Robert Strong's really strong, particularly if Lannister gets a way to recycle cards into Shadows. Like, they had some of those effects in first edition, right, Will?
Yeah.
So if Shadows becomes a Lannister, if Shadows becomes a Lannister theme and it gets these kind of like recycling effects, Sir Robert Strong can get real good real quick. Because while Lannister's gold production isn't as high as Tyrell's, it's still pretty solid. And particularly like Corsa Tyrion, who plays really well with Shadows, you know, you can just start really kind of like powering these effects. An 8 strength military body is nothing to scoff at. And you can play him and the Mountain in the same deck. So, because it's not technically really been revealed yet that the Mountain is Robert Strong. Beneath the Bridge of the Dream is the worst card printed in second edition.
So how many real resets are there at the game? Wait. How many real resets are in the game? So there's Valor, First Snow, Wildfire.
Political.
Varys.
So, plots. Beneath the Bridge is not.
Oh, I didn't realize you were talking about
Varys. I guess, and then you run to March?
We pseudo talk like, about stuff like
March. How do you play these all quickly enough for this to matter? No, this is so dumb. I can't imagine how this is meant to work. It is so trashy trash.
Yeah, the random is just too much of a hit. I don't know what stat boost I would need there to make that random hit worth it to me. I'm thinking like 5 gold boost maybe. Like, I'd honestly have considered this if it recycled and gave me like, you know, -4 gold on my next plot or something, because the recycle then could be powerful if I get to choose what I'm doing, but
No, it's garbage. So
yeah, let's just stop talking about it. It's making me sad.
Yeah.
So I think they get a C. I think Sir Robert Strong is a one of in most Lanny decks, but you'll never see Beneath the Bridge of Dreams printed in a good deck.
Yeah, C plus. Because Sir Robert Strong is really strong.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a B plus and then an F. So I guess C plus is fine. Like, if we're pretending that's how averaging works.
It's a student that did really, really well at the beginning of the year, but just kind of slacked off towards the end. And, you know, you gotta figure out how to square that circle. C plus seems reasonable to me. Scott, you want to do your 2 favorite cards?
I don't know if they're my 2 favorite cards, but sure. So Greyjoy, first card is Nighttime Marauders. 4 cost, military power icons, 3 strength. He's a raider. It's a singular raider, apparently. I have this thing where they print cards that are supposed to be plural, like Marauders, and then they're singular traded, and they can have attachments. Because you can give 1 sword to Marauders, and they all hold it. So he has Pillage and Shadow 3. And then Reaction, after Nighttime Marauders comes out of Shadows, choose a character in the opponent's discard pile. That player reveals his or her hand and discards from it each card with the same printed cost as the chosen card. And then we have Greyjoy Avenge, which is cost X. X is the number of opponents you have. Interrupt. When the marshalling phase ends, you become the first player. So, since we're going to talk Joust, because it's a real format, it's basically a 1-cost event for Greyjoy that makes them first player, which is pretty good for some builds. But you have to... It's okay. It's fine. But these Marauders, man, they are broken as hell. You think about basically spending 5 gold, getting 3 strength, Pillage, Bicon, with a positive trait and the ability to discard however many cards from your opponent's hand if you have that type of knowledge. Or if you guess and there's a card that will really ruin your day, take that away. Also, as we mentioned, if you know the game, many factions have cost slots that they have a lot of cards.
Did we just say Barra has like, all 3?
Yep.
Barra, you name 3. Chances are you'll hit something. Or Martell, if you name 5, chances are you'll hit some really good things.
Or name 3. Green, just get rid of all the shit they wanted to jump in.
Yeah,
this is absurd, and these Marauders are redonk.
If you hit 1 card, you still play it.
Mm-hmm. If You would often play it, not in every deck, but you would certainly play it.
I would play it in every deck just for the hand reveal.
That's true. The hand reveal is pretty crazy. Then think about it if you're combining factions. So there are cards like Seen in Flames and his Viper Eyes and Queen's Men. And you know what's in their hand. You take one thing with Queen's Men. Then you take at least one more with Nighttime Marauders. Because you've been pillaging things, so you know you can get any cost slot in their discard. This card is off the chain and probably is a misprint. Should not have been printed.
So I hope they're like, oh, we totally meant to say just one card. Oops, our bad. Errata. But yeah, no.
I mean, Errata is open now.
The sheer amount of power this adds to Euron and like Triss is completely insane.
Mm-hmm. And Asha.
And I played with this earlier today. The fact that you can put it into shadows and then bring it out of if you're a first player, you can put it into shadows and then bring it out of shadows in the marshalling phase is so stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I chucked like four cards from my opponent's hand in the marshalling phase. I was just like, all right, well, I've got five gold, so in shadows, out of shadows, three cost. Hey, look, all that shit's gone. I win.
And it's an okay body for challenges, too, so.
And it's got pillage, so it further, powers the next one you play.
Mm-hmm. Or you powers Euron, yeah. Seize the Initiative is, I think, very strong in Joust, and I particularly like in a Martell Kraken deck that can go second to get its economy going and to respond to what its opponent is going to do in the marshalling phase, then play Seize the Initiative to go first in the challenges phase to switch the whole like logic of the marshal the challenges phase around, which can be quite frustrating. Particularly if they're anything like Saltcliff Sailor or something, they'll be like, oh, okay, this is the turn I can go off with my Ricasso and my Saltcliff Sailor. Very, very strong. It's busted. It's busted in Melee. It needs to have been pre-restricted in the last FAQ. like, stupid, stupid busted in that format. And I agree. I think Nighttime Marauders should not have been printed at all. I don't think it is a Greyjoy card. I don't know why looking at your opponent's hand and then discarding all the cards from it is suddenly a Greyjoy theme. Like, it would make more sense as a Bera or Martell card. It should not be a card at all, but it would make more sense in either of those factions. But it...
Well, if it's a good card, it doesn't go to Bera. It goes to Greyjoy or Tyrell or Tark. Those are the houses it goes to.
So... Yeah, this is a very strong pack for Greyjoy. I think I'm just going to give it an A because I really do think Nighttime Marauders is going to see a lot of play. So I'm going to give it an A.
I'm going to give it an A minus just because I don't think Seize Initiative is that great. But Nighttime Marauders an S.
Same reasoning as everyone else.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a plus, and it is very interesting to me that Greyjoy basically got two pretty busted cards. I mean, obviously in respective formats, but huge. Just huge.
Yeah, next. Who's up?
All right. Scott, do you want to do Star? Tar?
You get Tar because I'm taking Martell.
Who's getting Targ?
Not me. I'm taking.
Okay.
It's me.
Here we go. Aegon. He is a unique, non-loyal Targaryen character. 4 cost, 3 strength, intrigue and power icons. He's a lord. He has shadow 3, and the reaction after Aegon Targaryen enters play, search your deck for an army or mercenary character, put it into play, and shuffle your deck. At the end of the phase, if that card is still in play, return it to your hand. And then we've got Unexpected Return. It's a 5 cost Targaryen event. Sorry, non-loyal. And challenges action, choose a character in your discard pile, put it into play. These also seem like really interesting Targaryen cards. I mean, right now, Aegon is probably, tutoring up Daario for you? and giving you a pretty huge challenge phase, but I think this is a pretty hard.
And Second Sun.
Second Sun's is what I'm getting, yeah.
And Second Sun.
I mean, Dario's really good.
Just not running him.
Did you get as well?
You can get Jorah.
I mean, you get Jorah.
Yeah. I mean, it telegraphs pretty hard. We've got to get, like, Griff slash John Connington as a mercenary, right?
And I don't think we're getting Griff. I think we're getting a John Connington.
Okay.
Considering that this isn't young Griff, it's Aegon, right?
Oh, that's fair.
So.
You can also get that 10 strength.
Yeah, or the 8 strength. Mm-hmm. For me.
They are. The 8 strength was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
there's just a lot of really cool things you can do with this Aegon, to be honest. Like, I think he's a really cool card. I think
we haven't mentioned the best thing you can get with him is Starfall Cavalry.
Yeah, it does not have to be in-house. That is true. That is true.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah.
If you're playing Martell Banner Dragon, you could be dropping the cavalry, three cards.
Yeah, they are Enter's play. They are.
Pretty good.
I was thinking they were Marshall for some reason, but they are Enter's play. That's pretty cool.
What's your Enter's play? Sorry, yeah. I missed that.
The new Viper's Bannerman.
Oh.
The Starfall Cavalry. Yeah.
No, draw Starfall three. Cavalry.
Right, the one that draws cards.
Draws,
yeah, yeah. Draw three if
draws
it's what?
Two, I thought. No?
Three.
It draws one.
Draws three if there are three or more used.
Yeah. Oh,
okay. One if there are less than three.
Okay. Yeah, that's a pretty good play.
So it's
The Host of the Bone Way?
Is an army.
Blah, blah, blah? Is it... Oh, no. Can Aegon get it, though?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course he can.
Yeah.
Yes.
Silly.
He can get any army or mercenary character. He's a cool, like, Banner the... Both of these cards are cool Banner Dragon cards, right? Like, Unexpected Return.
Unexpected Return is actually good.
I think it's a cool card, like...
Yeah, I just don't think you're ever really going to find space for it. I could be wrong.
I think it's very good.
I mean, it's hard to cancel a Hand's Judgment. I mean, it's a little weaker against Martell, because Martell has a flat two-cost cancel, right? So you have to be very careful of when you play this against Martell. But against other factions, it's like almost impossible for them to cancel with Hand's Judgment. Maybe, I guess, Bran is the only other easy cancel to it. And it can get any character in the discard pile. So if your best dude or dudette ends up in the discard pile from Intrigue Claim, you're paying 5 gold, getting it out. You can get a surprise dupe. You can do... That can save your board.
I don't think Targ can afford this.
Well, it doesn't need to be in Targ, though. It's a Banner Dragon card. It's non-loyal.
Yeah, I don't know. Like
a Targ dragon? Like a real dragon?
Much rarer now. Banners are just so much rarer now.
But if you're battering to stand, you're playing a big dude deck, right? And so let's say you're battering to stand, so you're battering to dragon, you have Plaza Pride, you have Balon out, you discard Asha to stand Balon, you pay the 5 gold you left over to bring back
really
Asha. Pretty
damn
good.
I think John's Bera dragon deck would have liked this card from Thrones War, because you could do plays all like that. Just discarding all your high-cost dudes and then just paying 5 gold to get them back. And they're available for the challenge. They're on action for the challenges phase.
I like the idea of, like, this is a really strong Doharis counter if you're running big guy Targ. Like, because they Doharis, you have one of those guys duped, and now that dupe goes to your discard pile, and you're like, well, screw you.
That's another interesting play. I like that.
That I think is what just sold me on the card right there, because like that I really want that like Dothraki deck to be good, but Doharis really like, because a lot of people are running two resets because everyone on Earth is running Wars to Come, because why the hell wouldn't you? But like now Doharis isn't really as much of a threat because you can Unexpected Return whatever just got Doharis away and then be like, all right, I still have Drogo and Dany, good luck.
Yeah. I mean, and I can see other just like kind of weird corner case times that I would actually want to go ahead and pop something. Like, say I've got Breaking Ties out. I make a military with Khal Drogo. I pop him to Breaking Ties to bounce something. Then I bring him back in. Now I make my second military with him. Like, there's a lot of versatility.
Yeah. Sure, I'm not super crazy about that play. But sure.
I'm saying that's not necessarily my game plan, but I mean, it's versatile. There's a lot of ritual application.
Right. And if push comes to shove and it's a dead card in your hand, you can chuck it to stand any character in the game. Like, Targaryen has a lot of uses for this card, and Banner Dragon has a lot of uses for the card. I think it's a really obnoxious card that people are going to get sick when it's used against you. You're going to be like, oh, pardon my friend. Sorry, Will. But you're going to get like, it's a frustrating card, right? It continues to devalue the discard pile as an effective way of like getting rid of your opponent's resources. Yeah. Getting rid of your opponent's resources.
Yeah. Thanks, Flea Bottom.
Mm-hmm. But it's not just Flea Bottom. It's a whole variety of other things.
No. Yeah. Flea Bottom is the greatest one, but I agree. But the reason why I hate it so much is Flea Bottom is the worst because, and I'm sorry to go on another Flea Bottom tangent, but this is a tangent against the way that we value Targ, right? The way that Targ's economy is set up, because basically Targ's economy is set up that a secondary economy mechanism for Targ to keep them in check is cards. But every time we devalue the discard pile, we are devaluing that extra cost slot for Targ and making it negligible. And this is another card that does that, but at least this card is a one-for-one trade.
This is very good with consuming flames too, right? Yeah. Because you can either use it with consuming or you can use it after consuming, which is expensive. Mm-hmm. But like on a meddling turn, that's 3 whole gold. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
I agree, and many Targ decks run Tourney Grounds.
Yeah. It definitely pushes Targ towards like a mono Targ towards meddling.
You know what this would be good in? First edition. Knights of the Hollow Hill.
Oh, yeah.
This is a super good Knights of the Hollow Hill card.
All right, now we're in
full cards. All right,
I think this is an A-.
A-?
Yeah, A-.
A. Ooh, wow. I guess I'm maybe actually a little lower. But right now I'm going to just give it a B+. But a couple more targets for Aegon, and I might be convinced to bump it up.
But
I just here's want the thing, Second Sons.
Just getting Second Sons so online and getting that chain going and getting a four printed cost, 3 strength body with 2 icons is pretty good.
All right, Martell.
That's you, Aaron.
Okay. Sir Garrus Drinkwater is a unique Martell loyal character. 6/5, which is really good stats for Martell. Military intrigue, knight, renown, shadow 5. After Sir Garrus Drinkwater comes out of shadows, choose a card in your plot deck and switch it with a card in your use pile. Literally every time you use this, by the way, you're getting at Prince Dorne's behest, right? Unless you really, really need that march. And then the Shadow City. The Shadow City is a House Martell loyal location. Cost 3, Dorne, Shadow 2. Reduce the cost to marshal each of your cards into shadows by 1. Challenge action. Kneel the Shadow City and discard 1 card from Shadow to draw 2 cards. Shadow City might as well not exist, at least for a little while. There's just not enough Shadows cards for it to make it worth playing. I'm sure it'll be good, and I'm sure this means Martell's getting Shadows as a theme. But until that actually happens, this can sit in your binder and just wait for, like, critical mass of Martell cards. I'm sure once we get to that point, it's good. I'm not sure it needs to be a challenge action, but that's neither here nor there. I don't think this wants to be HRD. I think it's asking you to run 3. That's why it's, got that Shadows 2 on it, because any extra dupes, you don't have to bother duping it unless you're really worried about PD. You can use it to fuel itself at that point. And Garrus is the star here. Garrus is a freaking phenomenal card. Getting your Valor back, being able to Valor early, knowing that you have him to get it back is fantastic. Being able to get back your at Prince Dorne's behest for any of your used plot shenanigans is completely insane. Getting to get a march back when your opponent knows you've already used 2. A third march to the wall seems real, real strong. A second counting on demand at building if you really need to fetch your Dorne and you can't find it. it's extremely strong, extremely versatile, expensive, but also expensive on a body that in and of itself is really good value. Like that 5 strength spot is obviously always super important because that's the one above Drac, unless, you know, Daniel starts to eat your life. And Renown is good.
I mean, this is what Beneath the Bridge of Dream wanted, right?
Yeah, I think.
Agreed.
They're in two different planes of existence.
For a dude who's killed by pirates in the opening Quentin scene of Dance Dragons, this is a very powerful
dude. He was so renowned for it. You know, all over Essos, a thing of Garrus Drinkwater.
So, right? Sir Garrus is the one that dies off screen, right?
I don't remember for sure.
Doesn't really matter. Talk about the card.
No, he's actually the guy who survives. Actually, he's one of the best. It's the other one that dies. The other Drinkwater that dies. So I apologize.
So he's Cletus's buddy.
Yeah, he's Cletus's buddy. Fantastic cards. I'm much more bullish out of the box with Shadow City. Yeah, Aaron's exactly right that it's a sleeper card simply because it's the first cycle or first pack of the Shadow cycle. So we've got to wait. But I think this is a cool Martell build that I'm excited to sort of see. I don't also think I agree with Aaron. I think you could run this as HRD because it's safe with that loyal tag from a lot of other BS. And you could still run 2 more of them to fuel this and protect it from return to hand effects and things like that. So I just am really interested in Shadow City build. So I'm really excited that this was printed in the first pack, because it literally says every time I open or they spoil a pack, I look at the Shadows cards. I'm like, okay, how do I build a Shadow City deck? How do I build a Shadow City deck? People are going to be thinking the whole cycle about it, which I think is really cool and is an immediate deck building challenge for the cycle. So I think these are really cool Martell cards. Drinkwater is going to be probably one of the most hated cards in the game once Martell players figure out how to
it's
break
just
it.
Just expensive. He's not significantly.
No.
I don't think he breaks anything at all.
He's not a break.
You guys play Martell too much. Like, there's no worse feeling than, like, you. Aaron, you just said it's a great play. You've gotten the Martell player to use both of their march. You're like, oh, okay, I can safely go down to one character until we recycle plots. You're like, no, I'm going to bring this renowned body out, get my march back, march your dude. Fuck!
Even, like, break the game, like, have some combolicious kind of thing.
When I say break him, I mean find an extremely unpleasant and consistent interaction with him that will power what Martell wants to do.
Toolbox. The toolbox for Martell, which is what Martell likes. They like toolbox.
Sort of. Yeah. I mean, I think he'll be much more aggressive. Like, when I normally think toolbox, I'm finding answers, right? You've got a tool for every task. I think his use will be much more straightforward, efficient, probably.
And most he's a one of in index. Most Martell decks can't afford to have that many big bodies.
Yeah, he's a one of. I can't imagine running more than one of him in any current build, including used plot, because he's not fueling used plot. Well, he is if you get Behest back,
he's
right?
Not hurting it. Yeah.
Well, if you get Behest back, he's actively helping it because now you're cycling again. But now you're.
There was a Martell big guys deck that I that was good for. Like a chapter pack that I built and me and Aaron played, and it was good, and maybe you could fit multiple in that, but it's not good anymore.
I think Garrus is going to be extremely good. I think you guys are underrating.
You know what he's also
potential impact.
He's a one of in a lot of decks, and I think Shadow City will be good. It just is taking time, but I'm going to grade it as if it time has come. Like it is good, and I'm pretty confident it will be good. So I'm going to give them a B plus.
I'm giving them an A.
I give them an A.
I think A. Definitely.
I'm going to assume Shadow City is going to be good. I feel like I'll be vindicated by history.
Oh, yeah. I can't imagine. We don't get shadows at a critical mass to make this work, judging by the Shadows cards we've gotten so far.
We don't limit time for neutrals, right?
Yeah.
Sure.
Who do we rotate back around?
I can do Nefarious Acolyte. Nefarious Acolyte is a 3-for-2 non-unique green and blue icons. He's a maester, which is one of his many interesting things printed on the card. He's Shadow 2, action, kneel Nefarious Acolyte and pay 1 gold to choose a plot card until end of the phase. Treat it as if its printed text box were blank, except for traits.
I hate this.
Super strong. I know Aaron hates this card because it hits almost all the plots Aaron loves. And it's a good Breaking Ties answer. Yeah, it's a strong card, and I think we're going to see a lot of him. Yeah. Helps the Maester deck, helps Conclave decks. He's a really good card.
I mean, I agree. There's not much else to say. I don't think.
I hate Nefarious Acolyte. Why? Plots were fine.
We're getting a lot of plots.
It's just too much.
Plots are not taking around anymore.
Which is bad. I think traditionally led to some awkward metagames. So we'll see how this pans out. I know some folks are already unhappy with some of the plot shenanigans. So we'll see. I don't know.
The only things I want this to hit. It doesn't. This doesn't do anything to King plot.
It's
right. Yeah. And unless you draw into it, it's not doing anything to barring. Because you can't put it.
Well, you can just play it.
Unless you draw into it, because then it's probably over the shadow. And then it's trapped for the round, right? Yeah. Barring is just going to be fucking everywhere now.
Yeah.
Oh,
with shadows around?
I hate this card. I don't think it's even going to see a lot of play for a while. But, man. If Martell ever gets something that counters barring, it's going to have to be a lasting effect, and then pretty much immediately Terrell just goes, I'll slot this in. It's going to trigger Mace a bunch, and it does everything else. And, problem solved. And then Martell loses again.
I feel like this card is pretty...
How's this for power creep versus the house?
If the Rookery is the format, this card is absurd, even more so.
I think that this card is best in a settled or semi-settled metagame where you're relatively sure of what the range of plots that are going to be in the best decks, and then this guy will come in and out of the meta. So I think what will probably happen is you will see a significant amount of him at first, then it will fall off a little bit when people realize it's not as necessarily all-purpose and amazing as it reads on paper, and then someone will come and find, once the metagame settles, probably around Gen Con, we're going to see him come back.
Well, I don't know what you really want to hit with him.
What do you want to hit with him?
Battles, I guess, if that comes back. Sure, Meddling.
You can just marshal him and hit barring.
Yeah. But, good luck.
Forgotten.
That's all nonsense. Yeah, sure, he's good against... none of that sees play. Shit that actually sees play.
Breaking Ties.
Breaking Ties is good, but that's breaking also ties, yeah. Phase. And he kneels himself to do it.
Mm-hmm. But it's mostly the challenges phase that you're afraid of. Blood of the Dragon.
Blood of the Dragon.
The Tyrell plot, the strength bump one. Mm-hmm. Song of Summer, which still sees play.
Winter Festival.
Yeah.
The Night's Watch plot, 4-7-1.
I don't think it's Winter Festival. This is until the end of the phase, and Winter Festival is at the end of the phase, right?
It's an interrupt.
Your own beasts?
Isn't it? Or is it?
This is an action that would run
if right until is the last one that expires.
No, I thought it was until. I thought it was UA. It's no, AU.
Yeah, when until at. I thought.
Oh, okay.
It's interrupts, reactions, everything else.
Right, but like this is passive, like expiration. So it would be an until at thing.
It expires at the same time nightmares expires, which is after everything else.
Okay.
Long plan, yeah.
Long plan.
I don't know if I care about that. Long plan doesn't see play anymore. I guess. Yeah.
You're going to name plots.
It'll stop 202 pretty hilariously.
You can use it on your own Bennett. Secret scheme or sneak attack, rather.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, that's amusing.
Summer feast.
There you go.
I don't know if I do that. Okay, let's move on. I don't think it's really good right now. I think it will be, and I think it's. I hate it that it exists at all.
It's a meta card, but also it's a rookery card. If Danny wants to keep pushing rookery, which is another debate whether we like it or not.
Yeah, without debating whether we like it, I think this card and the next card definitely support my theory that FFG is going to push it. These cards definitely feel like they are designed for Rooker.
Yeah, I agree. I'll read it, and I hate it because it's such a silver bullet. Like, we had a silver bullet talk. This is actually a silver bullet card. Mm-hmm. Burning the Dead. Type event, neutral. Cost, 1. Action, remove each non-unique character in each player's dead pile from the game. Draw a card. This is actually a silver bullet card. Two things it does is turns off Drowned God pretty roughly and makes target's economy a bit worse if they're playing the...
Slaver's Bay Port.
Yeah, Slaver's Bay Port. I'm trying to think of the name of the economy. But either way, I don't think it's worth playing this unless you are expecting to see Drowned God everywhere in the meta or you are playing Rookery because... And Drowned God is still relatively big in the meta. Playing this card, I'm not even sure if it's worth playing because your opponent is playing Slaver's Bay Ports. Pretty much it's just you hate Tarl and you hate Old Wick and you want to make Drowned God people cry and Jesse will be very mad at you.
Real funny.
I don't think Drowned God is that big a problem, especially now that they just nerfed Cudgel. So this card's an F.
Only it had different flavor and hit discard. And maybe
the hit discard, I love this card like
but
this.
Who cares? Yeah. Might as well not be printed.
Does anyone have anything worthwhile to say about this card? Because I don't.
Yeah, no.
All right. Roy, do you want to exchange? Or actually, you did the Acolyte. Will, do you want to exchange?
Sure. Our last card in the pack is Exchange of Information. It's a neutral plot. 3 gold, 4 initiative, 1 claim, 8 reserve, which is pretty cool. Plot deck limit 2. It's a kingdom and a summer. And when revealed, choose an opponent. Reveal the top 10 cards of your deck. That opponent chooses 1 character, 1 location, 1 attachment, and 1 event revealed this way if able, and adds them to your hand. Shuffle your deck. You know, this isn't for everything. But I honestly really, really like this. I think there's a lot of decks where this maybe not a lot, but there are decks where this can pretty consistently net you 3 cards, maybe 4 if you're lucky. And there's a lot of decks where so much of the deck is already dictated, you're not really giving away that much knowledge. And hell, if you wanted to play with that knowledge game, I mean, this gives you the capability, like, If you want to throw in 1x tiers, 1x put to the sword, stuff like that, and then just wait and let your opponent maybe see it and then live in fear of how many you might be playing the rest of the game, like, I think that is a potential strategy that people I've known to play this game in the past would do, i.e. Greg, Bruno, those kind of folks.
This card is stupid good. Why is it? So why is it summer? Like, did Tyrell need a boost? Right. Tyrell just needed that extra boost, huh? You know, it's not good enough, Tyrell.
I think thematically, the Ravens are doing the information exchange.
They tell us winter's coming
like
to like, at least interesting in winter. Really. Yeah, like, no, this is a Tyrell plot, right? Maybe Martell, but definitely Tyrell. Yeah.
A good plot.
I mean, I think Night's Watch has a decent chance of hitting on all four.
Sure, but Tyrell also gets
hard plot.
No, well, Tyrell gets the 5 gold for it, right?
What?
Yeah.
Like
every good
location?
Summer card pushes them closer and closer to not having to mount. Like, because this can fairly easily replace counting.
It definitely, I think, replaces counting in some Tyrell summer decks. Yes. Particularly now, you need to run the king attachment. So you've added attachments to your deck.
You run 2 king attachments, and 2 bodyguards, and you just call it a day. And if you don't see it, you don't see it. Who cares? You're still getting 3 cards.
Yeah. It's a good refill.
Like 2 cards.
But I think it's a pretty good opener in Targ.
No. I mean, if they were opening counting, I guess why not? Depends if they're running the king attachment or not. They don't really want any other attachment besides the obvious one.
Well, if they're running the king attachment,
hey,
I mean,
this might
a lot of Targ decks
it.
Are running the king attachment now, and then you're also running the murder attachment. So that's 3 attachments. You're running God knows how many events, plenty of good locations, and fine characters. So opening this, you get decent initiative and 8 reserve.
Yeah,
I mean.
I really like that.
1 more gold than what was counting. You could also run that Skazrahazard.
That's true. This goes in that HRD Skahazadon deck that Aaron
moves. We built that. I built that. I built that with 11. It's pretty good. It actually wins a lot. It's not the best Targ deck because Targ is stupid, but like, it's not bad.
It's an acceptable deck in a vacuum.
Like in a more balanced meta, it would be really good.
All right, so are we free now to talk about the Shadows mechanic in general and what we think?
Well, I don't think we actually rated Exchange. I think
it's a B. You think it's an A? Well,
B.
Roy?
Yeah.
I think it's a B+ because I don't think it goes in every faction, but I think it's really solid.
Yeah, I'm at A-. I think where it goes, they love it. Like, counting with better numbers seems like a good idea. And potentially 1 more card. Even if your opponent chooses them. Even that level of filtering is good. Like, if you're not happy... Like, you know what you don't run if you're running this, though? Your 1-drop reducers. Just don't run them. Cut them. Like, I've been cutting them more anyway.
I don't know. There's still times I might actually still be...
It's an extra body.
I don't know. Claim soak. Sometimes you do just need the claim.
Sometimes you do. And you can still blow people out with the 7-1 Rose Road setup.
There you go. Okay, now I think we can talk about Shadows in general.
So, I think I really loved the Shadows is back. I'm still in that camp. I think it adds a whole level of interaction that I think the game has been missing. That I'm really excited for. I think obviously there are some bad reactions to Shadows, which is like the ways in which it powers Mace. But I think overall Shadows' mechanic is really interesting, and I'm glad to see it back. And I think it's even more interesting in first edition than it was in. Or excuse me, even more interesting in second edition than it was in first edition.
I think with the change gold curve, people are underestimating the difference that this is going to have on the cost, to be honest.
Oh, 2 matters
gold
less.
Matters more than it did in first ed, from what I gather. And
go ahead.
Also... So the amount of money you're spending on the Shadows effects, I think, is quite different than it was in First Edition, and it's going to require a lot of editing to the plot deck. So I think to get interesting abilities on a lot of your Shadows characters, you're going to take interesting abilities out of your plot deck a lot of the time, which I think people are undervaluing.
There you go. Hey, and Garrus lets you your interest.
General.
So.
And if you aren't building your deck with producers in mind for that, which it's a different deck build. So I think it's good that different deck builds exist, but
I think
you have to take this into account that a lot of people aren't.
I don't think you need to take it into any special extra account. I think that, like, if your faction has shitty economy, then you've got to deal with the fact that your faction consistently has shitty economy, right? Like, your Barrers and your Starks and your, That's it, right? Those are the two bad ones. Your Barrers and your Starks have to consider it differently because their economy sucks. But, like, everyone else just basically has enough eco.
Stark might be okay now, like, after this pack.
Unless they're running Guilty, in which case they might be. But
Stark,
really
I think the... maybe. Also, like, I think Stark is almost there if they're not there yet.
Okay, fair enough. We know Wyman's coming.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Wyman is quite good versus
Pack 2. Yeah, Pack 2.
That bear event that's coming is also really strong.
What bear event?
The one that you cancel a challenge that you initiated and you can initiate an additional power challenge.
Yeah, well, I don't know. That's not really econ, though.
Yeah, but...
like in the or action advantage in the way Wyman is.
Yeah, Wyman, I think, is a better overall card. I think you have to build with that Barrier event in mind. I do think it's very good, but I've had people debate me on that.
So what's the card of the pack?
Marauders.
Good.
Yeah, pretty clearly, right?
Marauders.
I think the only thing that's even close is Gaming Septon.
Best card, not favorite card.
Best card. We can do favorite also.
Okay. Best card is Marauders.
Yeah, best card is Marauders. Also my least favorite card. My favorite is Drink.
Marauders is good, though I think that there's a chance. I don't know. So that sort of plot manipulation still worries me about Drink. I think there's a chance he edges up there after a bit.
I think within the context of their faction, Shadow Priestess is the strongest card. But Aegon is my favorite in the pack. He's a theme win and a cool card. Do we have a Golden Company?
We're going for theme wins, then it's Varamyr.
They're both very strong, but Varamyr only has four traits, and he has more animal companions. So. Just saying. Aegon.
I think Burning the Dead is the best thematic card, right?
I don't know. I mean, you know.
No, it's actually thematically, it's not referencing that. Thematically, it's referencing the burning of the dead during the plague in Dany's city in Meereen.
Oh, well, then it should be a Targ card, A, but B, ew, anyway. Let's move on. All right.
A Targ card that cancels Targ cards.
Perfect. Self-police.
Hey, the best way to beat Targ is to play Targ.
There you go.
The best way to beat Targ is to play Tyrell. As both Sandy and Ibri, I believe, are about to show us. No, Sandy and Tomalucci are about to show us.
Or does that just prove the best way to beat Sandy is to beat Tomalucci?
I mean, we can just give, like, who's the worst throw? Oh, Daryl Lloyd, a Targ deck. A Tyrell deck, and he'll beat Sandy.
I don't know.
I feel like anyone.
Daryl Lloyd, Sandy.
Well, that can almost certainly happen at U.S. Nationals.
That was Daryl.
Good.
Daryl messaged me this week to say that he went 4-2 at his last world since I shit talked him on a Second Sons episode.
Nice.
So now he's back in the rotation for people to make fun of.
Yeah. Now,
good job, Daryl.
Now that we're dragging him back into the
game. Yeah, he was the head TO at first play, right?
Yeah, sure enough.
Mm-hmm. And he studied and like learned things. And
yeah.
It's the first time he's ever known how the game actually plays. He put together
this binder of like printed out the FAQ and the rule book and all sorts of rulings, links, and stuff. Yeah, he made it really official.
He's a fishy. Mm-hmm. You know what else is a fishy?
Danger zone?
No, we gotta prop it.
Yeah, I mean, if you
right,
let's prop Daryl.
I think
Lloyd.
We should
we go
broadly prop first player, which was apparently a huge success. So congratulations, Will.
Thank you. I thought you were gonna say we should more broadly prop TOs in general because I think that can get overlooked. Some it's a, mm-hmm. it can be a thankless job. So. I feel like we should.
Can definitely be a thankless job. Yeah, props that. Also, props to KublaCon, which was a huge success and fun. And but I will not. I refuse to prop Sid, who ran that tournament like with an iron fist of injustice. And
we do. That's your brother. You two look.
I won't
so
prop.
Much alike
I will prop his prop. Tournament, but I will not prop
I never
Sid
noticed it before.
And his tyrannical rule as a TO. You know, as we were saying, we told Sandy and Chris when they didn't do as well as they wanted to, they won't be the worst second son there because Sid is the TO. So, yeah. Womp womp.
Womp womp. All right. In the meantime, let's prop some winners. Barber, I believe, won Kubla. Props to Barber. Who won first player again?
Groff.
Oh, wait. Aaron Groff. Yep. So props to Aaron Groff. And I don't care about Minnesota because the rookery sucks.
Great.
Play better formats. But in Euro Nationals, whatever. I'm in them Broncos. All right, whatever. And more importantly, in Euros, friend of the cast, friend of everyone, Wispy Mustache Man Supreme, James Walmsley. Won the what will certainly be the second biggest tournament of the year, the European Championship, and somehow did not get a card design. So FFG, from the jaws of victory, manages to snatch a slop.
Yeah. Euros was such a gigantic success. I think it was bigger than last year's. And
pretty sure.
It just it sounds like every European walked away with a really pleasant experience I think Liam ran it, and so props to Liam. But yeah, FFG not giving Continental Champions card designs anymore, sort of on the DL, that's a sloppy move.
Does that mean Gen Con's not getting a card design?
Gen Con does not have a card design.
Yeah. Well, almost certain.
If Euros didn't get a card design, there's no way Gen Con is getting one.
So there's no way I'm ever going to Gen Con again. This will be my last Gen Con. Good to know.
It's probably going to be my last Gen Con too, so.
Nice. We'll do other things that weekend.
Oh. Yeah. Well, I will be glad to see you guys for a little
while. I'll be at U.S. Nationals, so that will be my last.
You can also, Will, come to New York sometime.
Or Philly. Like, Philly's cheaper.
No, that is true.
Philly is. Like, if you're going to travel to these guys, you should probably come to New York.
We may need to try and
birthplace of America.
We may need to look at trying birthplace to.
Man, how great did that turn out?
Whoa.
I don't know. Oh, okay, hold on. Hold on. No, it's not the danger
that
zone.
That's definitely the danger zone.
That's
that
true. But
if there was going
to
be a
I have
topic,
to,
the
I have
zone,
to defend
zone.
Philly we'll here. Because which team's football, which city's football team got in a fight with the president of the United States,
all
right?
Literally all of them.
Not literally. The Giants are
BFFs. Don't play in New York. New York doesn't have football teams.
The Jets are also
BFFs. The Jets also don't play in New York.
Just saying.
They're New Jersey.
Just saying. The Eagles got in a fight with Trump, and the Eagles won. That's all I'm saying.
How did they win?
How did they win? Because Trump banned them.
I mean, it's
so mad he issued a press release because they weren't going to come and meet him.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and continue to not care. Props to the Warriors, who I'm assuming won the finals by the time this airs. It just seems likely.
Will's gone. Scott's gone.
Yeah. No.
I'm here.
Flops to the FFG restricted list and lack of ban list and lack of a rotting mace and high tower to once around or something like that. Nothing else.
I think restriction, yeah, I agree. Like a rotting mace just in the binder.
That shouldn't be the only two things. Yeah, they couldn't go in the binder. There's another ridiculous mace. But, I think those aren't the only two Terrell cards that need to be restricted. I think Terrell is just... Like, if you can convince the top player in your meta to play Terrell, and everyone builds to counter Terrell, I feel like the top player in your meta just probably still wins, or probably still wins most of the time. And that's kind of a problem.
I think they come down to earth a lot if Mace and Hightower are restricted.
I think they're still the best house, but I think they come down to earth a lot. Here's the thing. I agree with the thrust of what Aaron's argument is, but he made it in like the worst possible way. So you're saying that if the best player in your meta takes
the best Terrell deck they can find, takes a really good Terrell deck. And everyone else is like, I know exactly what deck you're playing, I know all the cards, and I'm going to play to beat you. I feel like you're still probably going to win as that.
You're controlling the wrong variable. You'd be much more convincing if you said the worst player in your meta.
The worst player in your meta is not beating anyone ever. It has to be a little above the median, right? Like the median player in most metas is kind of terrible. Like Thrones always has that like huge range from the best players to the absolute worst.
Just like any other.
I don't know any other game, but yeah. I know that there's Thrones players who flip plots, and then I stare at them like, what the fuck were you thinking?
Anyway, unconvinced by Aaron's framing of his argument, but his argument is correct.
I'll take it.
Terrell's above curve.
Terrell exists in the...
Danger Zone.
Danger Zone?
All right.
Danger Zone.
Good episode, gentlemen.
Danger Zone?
Danger Zone.
James, what? What was the last name?
Congratulations.
H. Okay, good. Make sure it's not H. W, because that guy won enough this week.
No, actually, James W also does support us, but purposefully declined to be eligible for awards. Like, he put himself as a no reward.
Traditionally, his play denies him rewards, but, you know. Something about the sun and dog's asses.
Oh. Well, I guess this is
guaranteed to be listening. It's Wama.
I thought it was a rule that we don't insult anyone besides other podcast members.
Wama knows I love him.
He's
true. It's supposed to be co-hosts of the White Book. Give each other shit. Don't make me have to edit stuff out later when I try to decide whether, you know, person X is friends with Wama or if it was an actual.
I am in fact friends with Wama, if that wasn't obvious.
Whoa. I don't know if I can take that only from you. Are you sure Wama would say the same?
Wama would say the same thing about Glazer. He shares the English love of insult culture.
Oh, okay. Well, there we go then. Crisis.
Besides, he's riding high from his European championship. Wama can take it.
Yeah. His European championship and his mad rush to have more seasons than the White Book before, what, 6 months are out?
Yeah. It's a productive podcast.
Yeah, it really is.